You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Joining Evan and I today is a good friend of the pod. It's been a while since he's been on because he moved to the crazy state that is Florida. It is Alex Hooper, formerly of 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, now covering the Indians over at Sports Illustrated. And living, again, in the crazy state of Florida. Alex, what's going on, buddy?
Just living in the crazy state of Florida. I'm sure the hounds are going to be released around here a lot sooner than other places. So just surviving while I can, basically.
Yeah, I remember texting you, like, when you had to vote. And I was like, are you good, bro? Like, are you, things cool? Like, things chill? And you're like,
Dicey. Always dicey around these parts. I have like this celebrity squares of just awful people living below me, next to me, above me. It doesn't matter. It's Florida, man.
It's wild times. So what we're going to talk about today is the 2016-17 Cavs, aka the championship follow-up team. It's a team that I think is a little underrated in the context of the Cavs. There's some weirdness on there that I forgot about until I was looking up on this. You have the Deron Williams bit on there. You have Dante Jones kind of makes a difference. Kyle Korver comes into the picture here. You know, you have some stuff that's Eddie Tavares comes in here as well, which doesn't really matter. This is the Derek Williams experience for a little bit.
Hold the phone here. Eddie Tavares matters. He has a franchise record.
Does he really?
I think he has the most blocks in a single game.
Unbelievable. Icon. Put it in the rafters. This is the Kay Felder draft. This is the last Kyrie Irving season. There's just a lot going on in the season. This is also, of course, the Kevin Durant goes to Golden State season. And I think, you know, I think in a different world, I think there's an argument to be made that this is maybe the best of the four Cavs teams in some ways. Obviously, didn't win a title. Obviously, they lose the Warriors in five. It's also the last year of David Griffin. This is just a lot. This is like really the last year of the Cavs as we sort of first knew them in the second LeBron era. Evan, we'll start with you though. What do you remember about this? Like, what stands out to you?
When the Cavs traded for Kyle Korver, they got rid of, oh my gosh, Mike Dunleavy, who I absolutely... Okay, so I was conflicted when the Cavs brought in Dunleavy because I absolutely hated Mike Dunleavy before he came to Cleveland, and then I had to, you know, roll it back a little bit because he was a Cavalier, but then he gave me even more reasons to hate him. I think I've talked about this before on this show, but I wasn't sad to see Mike Dunleavy go and the Cavs get Korver, and I'm like, eh, it's like the rich getting richer. And shout out to Frenemies of the Pod, the Chase Down, when they were talking about how with the Lightyear boys, about how it kind of turned into a nuclear arms race between the Cavs and the Warriors on who could have the most absurd offense. And adding Kyle Korver was just adding even more absurdity to a very, very, very good three-point shooting team.
Hoop, what about you? I think this is the year where you and I started to get to know each other a little better covering games and whatnot this year and the year after. But what do you remember from this season?
I mean, that's the main thing. That's the thing that sticks with me is like meeting you and Jordan Zerm and like not a friend. But it's been so removed so long since that season. It's the Korver thing was big, but I just remember quirks mostly. That's just how as far as regular seasons go, I don't remember anything for like the years that I actually got to cover sports that like other people remember. I remember stupid things like the Andrew Bogut game.
Oh my goodness. Oh man.
Dude, so much media. They did a stand up right outside the Cavs locker room. They talked to him. He was jovial. I think all of his very conservative tweets made the rounds that day. And then I went in there like I'm not going to like this dude. And then he was so charming, and then he fractured his leg in 28 seconds, if that. Those are the things that I remember. But I agree with you about this being the best team, best Cavs team at least. And just the offense, just there was never a time they came down the floor where we didn't think they were going to score. They had weapons ever. I mean, there was seldom a time except maybe when DeAndre Liggins was getting run or who was it? Just there seldom a time where you didn't think they were going to score, and they always had a weapon at pretty much every position. That's what I'll always remember about those teams, but mostly that one, like when they added Korver, it was just every single time.
So it's to before we get into Korver and I think a lot of the stuff, I want to just talk about Mike Dunleavy for a second, because I was convinced that was like a really smart pickup for them. It was someone that LeBron had, I think, wanted. I think there was some smoke there in terms of him wanting to end up with LeBron. He is, you know, he's in his late 30s. It's kind of a, you know, can you get something? Because obviously Korver was still in Atlanta at that point. You know, are you going to get the Dunleavy that was, you know, a really good player for a long time, kind of an ornery defender, all that stuff, had played on the Bulls for a long time and kind of gone up against LeBron in those sense. You know, he now is in the front office of the Warriors. Like, he's been retired, but this was like replacing like the Sean Mary and Mike Miller minutes from those first couple of years. But he comes to the Cavs. He's traded for basically like nothing. They get him for pretty cheap. But I don't even remember his Wikipedia entry on this is like very small. But I believe he had like some injuries right off the bat. Was never really healthy, and then he just gets flipped, and it's just like, well, we're just gonna like move on from him. And he just wasn't making shots. I'm looking at his numbers during his time in Cleveland, it's better than I thought, but shot 35% from three. That would have been his lowest number since he was 29. This was like a 7-year low for him in terms of being a 3-point shooter. It felt like he was not reliable on that team in like the 15 minutes or so he's playing. And even though like the Korver thing I think didn't work out as well as everyone hoped, and I think certainly the adjustments for him. I distinctly remember Alex, him talking like about when his first scrum was about how like it was weird for him not to have to come off screens. Like he wasn't used to just catching the ball and being able to shoot. It was like Dunleavy, it was like, oh, that's like a smart acquisition for Griff. And it just absolutely did not work. And it's a roster that has a lot of, it's like, this is a roster that tried a lot of stuff and ultimately was so reliant on, you know, those top guys and with kind of Richard and stuff thrown in there, but it was really like they tried a lot of stuff. Like Liggins like mattered for about a good 3-week stretch there because they really just needed another good body on the wing.
Yeah. And I wonder how much with him, with Dunleavy was, I mean, certainly age at 36 had something to do with that where he really struggled, but I wonder if he just wasn't up to speed, you know, like a little random variation. He's just such a good shooter for so long. And then he was exceptionally bad for him. I just wonder why that happened. I'm guessing it's my baseball instinct to say that, like, oh, it's just random. But yeah, I remember him being very bad, but also I never liked the guy because he was a dookie and he was like a real dookie. So when he came, I was over it pretty quick, as were the Cavs.
Yeah, no, I think the Cavs were too. And Chris, do you remember that Dunleavy refused to report to the Hawks at first, and it was stalling Korver's debut with the Cavs?
Yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff this season in terms of like the guys that ended up. Like we mentioned the Bogut thing. I'm like looking at the roster right now, and it's like Larry. This was the Larry Sanders thing. This was
when they had bad blood with Mo Williams to start the year.
Yeah, and then he ends up getting like dealt for like as part of I think the Korver deal maybe or some other trade to kind of get him on. But that's like a real bummer to me is that like Mo Williams and the Cavs like kind of just had a falling out considering he's like A on the title team and B like the second best guy and for like a couple of years there with LeBron that first time, like really a vital piece to that. This is just like when this is again like there's just a lot of random stuff here and like Dunleavy's part of it. Obviously Korver's not as much, but it's like, you know, Richard Jefferson the year before like was that guy because he only came to Cleveland because he got out of his deal with Dallas at the last minute. If you look, and he would have been bad with the Spurs. Like his rebound with the Cavs was like sort of unexpected. You know, obviously you have in terms of Channing, like the Cavs wanted him before and he didn't want to come, and then they get him in a trade and he ends up like loving it and everything like that. This is the first like full tie year. There's just like so many guys that ended up playing minutes on this team. I'm like looking at those, like Derek Williams had to wear two different numbers because of like the different guys that were around. Cause when he originally was there, like Dunleavy was still wearing number three, as far as I can tell. You know, you have Chris Anderson is on this team, Andrew Bogut. Again, DeAndre Liggins, Jordan McRae is still on this team. The Larry Sanders thing, as we wrap up the first segment here, I want to just say, like, I spent so much mental energy talking myself into wondering if Larry Sanders could matter and, like, went to Canton to cover him and stuff and, like, cover the game he played with the Charge. And, like, for the life of me, all respect to Larry Sanders, who's a very nice to me when I got to talk to him. I wasted so much brain power wondering, and I think Cavs Twitter in general, like, wasted too much time wondering if Larry Sanders mattered at all, because the odds of him ever mattering that season were so, so low. And that was just quite silly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Larry Sanders is just kind of like a weird blip on this season. You know, the Cavs experimenting with their bigs behind Tristan Thompson and I guess Channing Frye, who, you know, kind of played a 4 and a 5 on this team, but like finding depth behind Tristan, they tried Chris Anderson. He tore his ACL. Larry Sanders clearly didn't work. Eddie Tavares, you know, franchise leader and most blocks per game. Like, that was an option. Like, Andrew Bogut broke his leg. Like, the Cavs failed, kind of more or less just failed to address really the necessity for depth behind Tristan. And I wonder if this was, you know, an early indicator of Warner Griff's, you know, just kind of fumbles in managing this team, because he has expressed regret of not finding proper depth behind both Tristan and Kyrie during all this. And I think this year is a good example of just not finding a guy who can stick.
Hooper, who's your favorite random Cav from this season?
From that season? So, again, going back to my hatred of Duke, I love Derek Williams coming out of college, and I actually did like a graphic project the year that the Cavs got the Kyrie and Tristan draft. And I remember making like this big billboard for them drafting Derek Williams 1, and I think Brandon Knight or Kemba Walker 4.
You're one of those people.
I wasn't steadfast in that. I was into it early on, and then the more I actually, this is a one instance of working in sports talk radio where I was like, all right, you guys are right. They should probably take Kyrie. It's not even a thought. So when I came around on Kyrie, I was like, I actually wanted Kawhi Leonard at 4. That's just a way back machine humble brag that matters to nobody. But long run on short, I really like Derek Williams. I really hoped and hoped and hoped that Derek Williams would finally break through, and he had his moments. I think he had more moments there in pockets than probably any other time that I remember in his career. I wasn't watching a ton in Minnesota, but when his usage got low and he did the things that role players do and rebounded and played defense and then ran the floor for LeBron to throw perfect alley-oops, like, I remember him just being pretty good and athletic and fun. So as far as random guys go, I think it's definitely D. Will. Well, that D. Will.
So, I think he was like 90% of what Jeff Green sort of was. I thought Jeff Green was like just a little better. Trusted him a little more as a shooter, even though I wouldn't trust Jeff Green to make threes like to save my life. I enjoyed the Derek Williams experience overall, and I was glad that he got the stick. I want to also just point out that this is the last stand of Deron Williams in the NBA. And that's like, I did not realize that, but so here's the thing. I'm looking at his numbers, and here's his numbers in the playoffs. He has 0.0 VORP for the playoffs. If you look at his per game numbers, plays 20 minutes a night in the playoffs, 24 games, including four starts, 7.5 points, 3.6 assists, shoots 84% from the line. Shot 41% on threes, 46% from the field. But the thing is, when I'm looking at him, or that's in the regular season, excuse me, but when you look at him in the playoffs, and his numbers, again, are not like particularly terrible in the playoffs. He shot 43% from the field, 38% from three, averaged 2.1 assists and 0.9 turnovers per game. These are not like terrible numbers. I just like do not for the life of me remember like a good Deron Williams playoff moment. And it's like crazy to me again, like this is like post his peak. This is like well past like when he was up there with Chris Paul in terms of those guys jostling for positions. The NBA's great next young guard. And obviously we know who the answer was there, but it's kind of crazy to me that like this was the end of Deron Williams' career. And it comes like sort of just like nonchalantly as the Cavs get smoked in the finals against the Ultra Warriors. And he's now like out of the league and like owns an MMA gym in Dallas.
What I remember from Deron Williams is the fact that he scored 5 points on 2 of 16 shooting, including going 1 of 9 from three with 5 turnovers over the course of 61 minutes in the NBA finals. He was absolute cheeks in the playoffs. And like you said, like I don't remember anything noteworthy. And like I was super stoked about the signing. I was stoked about him. I was stoked about Bogut. I was stoked about Sanders. Like, I mean, I was like just trying to grasp at straws here because I'm like, I think that, I mean, let's just be honest here. Out of all the additions the Cavs made this year, I feel like, I mean, not I feel, I know for a fact, like getting Korver was the best thing the Cavs did that year in terms of just adding extra players because everybody else is just, I mean, Derek Williams was fun, but I just don't think he like makes a huge, huge difference compared to like in the grand scheme of things, but I don't know. That's just maybe me. Like, Deron Williams stuck, and I always kind of forget that he played for the Cavs, and then, like, yeah. That I do, and then I get frustrated again.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, quick break. We'll be back with more with our guest, Alex Hooper, on this episode of Locked On Cavs. We're back, Alex. Okay, I'm going to ask you to make the case for this Cavs team being maybe not the title team, obviously, just sort of stands on its own, but I want you to make the arguments for me of why this team stands up with those other teams that were of the second LeBron era, the 4-year run that we sort of get here. Why does this team, do you think, ultimately have an argument to either being, you know, maybe if not number one because they didn't win a title, above those other teams that LeBron had the second time through?
I don't know that I can make like a convincing statistical argument or anything like that. I mean, they were almost 3 points better with their offensive rating. They only lost one playoff game before the finals. Obviously 2016 won more games, but I remember them just, it was so tough. It was so tough to watch them because you knew how good they were, but you didn't ever know how good they were. You know, like they were so much better than everyone else in the East, and they were just obliterating teams. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we ever really knew how good they were because I think sans Durant, they could have walked into that finals and, you know, not blown a 3-1 lead. I think they could have won like in 5 games or something like that. I think they were just so cohesive, and I think that maybe that's my answer. I think they were just so cohesive at that point that they were just a lot of fun to watch. The personalities meshed. That's when you started to get the RJ Channing stuff, and then they were just dominant, man. They were so good. And was this the year where they won, or they broke the 3-point record against the Hawks? Was that right after Korver came in and they hit like 26, 28 or whatever?
Yeah,
it was.
It's just something that's outrageous.
Yeah, I think that.
Yeah, that's, and it was just a bloodbath. It was everyone was out, I want to say like early in the third. It was just an absolute bloodbath. I remember watching it at my brother's and everything. We're all hyped for it. They were just so dominant and cohesive, and they had the personality. They meshed. And it was also my first year getting to cover them most of the time, so I think that's a lot of it. But I don't know, I had a lot more fun with these guys because I wasn't nail biting the entire time.
Evan, what about you? What is your take? What is your just kind of take in the hierarchy of the second LeBron era about this Cavs team?
I agree with a lot of what Alex said, like how truly dominant and cohesive and fun this team was to watch. And when they wanted to flip a switch, they could flip the switch and make a team look absolutely foolish like they did against the Hawks when they broke that record. And it's just like that. And I do wonder, like, looking back at this team and just how dominant they especially were in the playoffs, like, do you think this is one of, if not the best offense in modern NBA history?
I think there is an argument for it. And I think I would argue it's the best offense of the second LeBron era, because I've just never, and some of this is not backed up by data. Like, there is not like an offensive rating that is going to like just beat the shit out of every other offensive rating that you could find, right? Like, that is just not,
man. Real hoopers know.
Right. But it's just like, I've never been sure, more sure of a team to just like absolutely just wreck you by going off, by being able to just drop as many buckets on you whenever they wanted. Like, it almost just felt like until the finals, they were just playing with Eastern Conference. Like, I learned that lesson the first year when they just kind of like did whatever they wanted against Atlanta. And then, you know, the second year, and like, they obviously have some stuff to go through that first year. And obviously the second year, like, it's this whole other thing. And that's like almost the most dramatic year that you could think of with that team. But you look at this year, it's just like, they were a little more put together. Obviously it all falls apart in the off season, but like, they were just so clicking. And like, Kyrie is good for when he's out there. LeBron is just like playing at a really high level. Kevin's a little more settled in this year. I thought this is where he really looked most comfortable kind of playing with LeBron and sort of getting into what we would see kind of him being most effective. Like, I just thought like this was the Cavs team that could just blow the barn doors off of you. And I just think like what they were doing with the amount of shooting they had, and just like, you know, you could argue like, you know, was Korver like the right kind of addition? I think there's an argument to kind of have there. Should you look for something a little more versatile? I don't think they were going to be able to get that based on the pieces that were out there. Like, you were the kind of guys that I always found like the critiques of what David Griffin was doing were a little bizarre, because you were just never going to get the kind of guy that would ultimately just take you to being able to really kind of guard Durant and guard all those guys. I've just never felt like a team was just more equipped to just blow the barn doors off of you. And I really do think that it is tainted a little bit by the fact that it is in this first KD Warrior season. Like, I think this team's a little lost to the history of the last couple of years of the NBA because of the season. And I distinctly remember finding out that KD was going to the Warriors and just being like, oh, well, they're probably going to win the title now. Like, because they just made that upgrade. And it's just like, there's no way to compete with that firepower. This team, like, could do that. And there's a game we'll talk about in the last segment that to me is probably a top three to five Cavs game, non-playoff edition of that second LeBron era, that I think kind of proves how good I think this team really was.
Yeah, I mean, it's just also, I'm like thinking about it now, like, it kind of stinks with how dominant this team really was, because this is the last year Kyrie was here, and then it just, the last year Griff was here, this team was like the apex of the Cavs offensively, and then it's just been a slow decline. Not a slow decline, it's been more of a snowball at the top of the hill. It's been gaining momentum ever since, but like, it just kind of stinks to think that like, this was the most fun team and we only got to really taste it for a year before it just kind of completely got blown up when you trade away Kyrie for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and Ante Zizekin, that eventually a pick that became Colin Sexton. Like, you can think whatever you want of Sexton, but at the same time, like, good things do come to an end, and they came to an end way too quick with this Cavaliers group.
Alex, any kind of final, do you feel like this, I think Evan's right, saying this is like the close, this, if the 26, 20, the final joint is certainly, I think, probably the retrospective apex, but this team, I think, did level up, and then it just sort of falls apart. What do you just, like, what do you make of the fact that this all did just kind of fall apart so quick after the season? Like, what do you attribute that to? Is there anything that when you read about this, when you think about this, that you attribute that to?
Yeah. Dan letting Griff go, I think, is the big thing, because I tell myself the entire time that Griff would have been able to meander that situation and got Kyrie to swallow his ego for at least one more year. Like, maybe just get him to stay for that one more year. I don't know. Like, that's always going to be the biggest what if for me.
Look, but like, at the same time, if he didn't get it to work out with Kyrie, didn't Griff have Bledsoe and Paul George on the table and was ready to pull the trigger for the Cavs? I know the Pacers owner walked away from the trade, but I feel like Griff would have been able to get that move done as well instead of Kobe. And I think, I think that's one of the biggest things in recent memory Cavs fans can hold Dan at fault for, is other than, like, you know, his political standings, just letting Griff walk away and just kind of, you know, the architect of this team and one of LeBron's guys just walk away was definitely not a great move in hindsight, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just in the same vein, like, as we only got to see the apex for that 1 year, but they could have been better, you know? Like, you don't know what happened. It was a complete roster overhaul. Like, maybe there was something in the works. And, you know, maybe you do go get Paul George and you have, you know, the current Clippers early. It's just with
plus
LeBron.
Plus Kyrie. You know,
yeah,
it's because I think that trade was Kyrie. It ends up being a big three of Kyrie, Paul George, and LeBron. Kyrie, Paul George is the big three with Kevin going elsewhere.
Yeah, I thought it was Kevin Indiana, and then they were going to send Kyrie to Phoenix and bring in Bledsoe, and that's where like a lot of the clubs.
Oh yeah, that's one of the. I think there's like a bunch of variations of it, but yeah, I think that's definitely one of them.
I mean, right. Let's just be honest here. They could have traded Kyrie for Brogdon and Middleton, and imagine how stupid a team of Brogdon, LeBron, Middleton, George, and Thompson is. Like, that's a lot of fun, but whatever. It'll haunt my dreams.
And I gotta clarify. I gotta clarify, that Hawks game was actually a 5-point game. It was 135-130. I just remember that being over super early. Granted, the Hawks dropped 42 in the fourth and came back, but
this is close to peak LeBron does not give a shit about defense. Like, this is about like him This is leaning into the next year where he's just like not like sticking his foot, and then the year after the Lakers where he's just really not trying. Okay, we'll take one last. Yeah, it's unbelievable. The switch flipping and Ty being able to harness that switch flipping is just, I think, one of the most underrated parts of the Ty Lue. All right, take one more break.
On that.
Love Ty. We'll talk about Ty in the next segment. All right, we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. Okay, we're. We're back here. I'm going to tell you guys, aside from they lose the finals, and I don't think that finals was particularly close. I think, you know, it's 4-1. There's like some close games and stuff, but I think that is this the year I think KD hits that dagger in Cleveland, if I'm remembering that correctly. Yep. I was facing that and I was just like blown away by that shot and just remember the
took the air out of the arena.
It was just just everything out of the arena just pops like a balloon. One of my favorite all time games from this era is the 2016 Christmas Day game in Cleveland. Cavs Warriors. The Cavs win 109-108. You have the Cavs only play 8 guys in this game because JR didn't dress for whatever reason. DeAndre Liggins was a starter in this game and played 22 minutes, took one shot. Channing Frye, RJ, and Shump come off the bench. RJ and Shump were combined 3 of 20 from the field, made 1 of their 10 3-point attempts, and the Cavs win. Kevin Love is a team high plus 12, has 20 points and 6 boards. LeBron has a 25. Or excuse me, has a 31, 13 rebound, 4 assist game, and Kyrie has 25 and 10, and hits another absurd game winner. This one over Klay Thompson, just with a miraculous dribble. The game is incredibly tense. There's I think that this is the Richard. There's an all time Richard Jefferson dunk in this game, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I thought you were going to mention that. That's like one of the best dunks ever.
Yeah, like. This game ultimately didn't matter. Like JR himself, later in the year, was talking to someone and said, like, you know, that game doesn't bear too much on how we match up now. Of course, this is pre Kyle Korver coming in, all that stuff, and like Derek Williams is on the roster at this point and everything. But like, I just remember, I did not get to cover this game, unfortunately. But I just remember watching this game and watching it again and just being absolutely just blown away by how great this game was and just how juice the Cavs were for it and how close they played that Warriors team. I don't think there's not a regular season game from this era that I remember more vividly that I wasn't at than this game. The caveat is that I wasn't there. In terms of game I watched on TV from this era, this one is the one that is just most seared into my brain in terms of how intense it was and how much I enjoyed just kind of watching it kind of unfold.
Yeah, it was a fun game for sure. I obviously wasn't there either. For those who know, and Chris knows, and I'm sure Alex knows as well, like I didn't join the Cavs beat until last year, so obviously I wasn't covering the team that closely. But no, I remember this game because I my family is like, all right, you can't watch basketball, it's Christmas. But I was like still sneaking like every now and then at the game, and eventually like I was able to watch it. Like that was the most electric crowd other than game six of the 2016 finals, just because it's the Warriors and everyone gets up for that game because that's like, you know, Cleveland's rival at the time. And just it was just absolutely nuts. And that Richard Jefferson dunk is still one of my favorite dunks in Cavs history, besides, you know, LeBron having no regard for human life. But whew, that was a fun game. And like you said, like I know the players downplay like it didn't mean a lot, but it definitely made the Warriors look vulnerable in the current state. And like heading into that game, Golden State was 27-4. They walk out of this 27-5, and Cleveland was 23-6. So clearly, like, this is a Clash of the Titans kind of matchup. And I think since the Cavs and the Warriors are still, like, you know, neck and neck in terms of talent, like, I do think that definitely played a part in just how everything went down. But, like, I kind of disagree with you on your take that the Cavs really didn't have a chance in the NBA Finals this year. Like, I feel like Cleveland was still in it, but I think Kevin Durant, the reason they brought him in is he killed the Cavs in that game-winning shot over LeBron, and I think it was over LeBron. But either way, it was in Game 3 in Cleveland, and it absolutely just sucked the air out of the arena. But, like, no, I think I just look back at this game like, okay, no, this Warriors team may seem like it's unstoppable, but they are beatable, and the Cavs kind of have a formula in order to make that happen.
Alex, what do you think? Did the Cavs have a more of a shot in this game than I'm giving them credit for?
So they got sucker punched both games, 1 and 2,
yep,
in Oakland.
113-91. Warriors win game one, 132-113 in game two. Durant has 38 in game one and 33 in game two.
Right. So that's already, you already feel after two games, you're like, you can't stop all these dudes and him. And then I remember it felt like those games hadn't even happened. I was in the arena for game three. Again, I remember a bunch of ancillary stuff about it because I didn't get to watch the game. I was in the arena. I didn't have a seat. They didn't give me a seat. So I remember seeing Dave Chappelle and Amy Schumer and Young Thug that night. I did poke my head out right before that hit, but like mostly I was just listening to the crowd from inside the bowels of the arena that whole night. And it was just hype the entire time. And when you say that KD shot took the life out of the arena, like, it was like a funeral. It was like 36,000 people at a funeral. That's what it felt like. And I think the emotional weight of those first two games and then that shot, I mean, I don't think they had it goes without saying, I don't think they had a shot going down 3-0, but I mean, like, on an existential level, like, they did not have – there was nothing left to give. Like, they were dead in the water just emotionally. Like, they could have played 100 games, and, like, I don't know that you could bounce back from just getting slapped across the face and then just uppercut. It's just what it was. It was just 1-2-3, and I know they bounced back for game four in kind of in a big way, but I don't know that the Dubs were putting out max effort in that game. I think kind of once it
– Kyrie drops a 40 spot in that stretch. Game.
Yeah,
I want to also – one thing that Channing Frye tweeted recently about this was some guy from Warriors Twitter was, like, tweeting a clip from that finals of, like, of them just, like, ripping through the floor of Curry's impact. And this is what he said, and I think this encapsulates so much of it. Just my two cents, it's not, quote, just Steph, end quote. The only way you can try to compete versus that level of team if they score twos. But if they are going to run with threes, it's just impossible. So anyone driving to the hoop most of the time was uncontested. That team was that impossibly good. And I think that's right. Like, the Cavs, like, had, like, I think for all of the critiquing we can have of Ty, and Alex, I want you to just defend Ty Lue here now. But, like, when I look back at this, it's like, I don't, in the Longobardi stuff and all that stuff, I do really just think that, like, that team is just so hard to game plan for, is that it was going to take the Cavs being perfect. And I think Evan is right in saying, like, once they just got the gut punch of game three and then just getting blown out right away, like, I don't know how you, like, that's a little different than the 3-1 stuff. You didn't have the momentum shift of a Draymond Green getting suspended. There's none of that. And it's just that team, the Warriors team that year was just overwhelming in so many ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think going into the series, they had the chance. I don't think it was over from the moment the series started. I think it just ended pretty quick. That's all. That's how I felt about it. If you want me to defend Ty, I don't feel like I have to a whole bunch, because I mean, you can't look at 2016 and tell me that he didn't massively affect that entire series. Like, you can't win in that situation unless you have a damn good coach. And maybe he was a damn good coach who had the ear of his guys and could motivate his guys. I mean, he was always good at managing personalities. He's the same as Terry Francona, where he might not be the most tactically sound dude. And I know over time it changed, but like, you can manage people to a point where you are getting 110% out of them all of the time. But I also think he was pretty tactically sound. I think he knew how to deal with that team on some level. You had LeBron. I don't think you could substitute any player in NBA history in for LeBron and Ty Lue wins that series. I'm not saying that, but I don't know, man. I think he was good with the out of bounds stuff. I think he was good at getting his guys to buy in, and I think he was good at getting LeBron to, again, 110% of LeBron. I don't know that anyone ever brought that out of him other than Dwayne Wade. I don't know that anyone ever got like max LeBron other than Dwayne Wade. I think he just needed that connection. And I know it's kind of anecdotal and it's just kind of gut eye test stuff, but I personally really liked Ty. I really enjoyed him. He was fun to be around. He was very kind, but I think those guys loved him. I think they really did. I think they really cared about him, at least the upper echelon guys. And I don't know what Kai's relationship was with him, but he listened, and I think that's about as good as you can get out of him. I think he's a fantastic manager of people, a fantastic leader of men, and I am not smart enough to, you know, break down film and say, like, Ty did this, but he always had the buy-in, at least early.
Evan, where are you at on Ty?
Obviously the best coach in franchise history. I think you and I both agree that if the Cavs were looking for a guy who could just be a leader in the locker room, they should have not let him go in the first place, because it's kind of like they have like a diet version of that with JB right now. But also of the same thought process that it was good for Ty's health, both mentally and physically, to kind of walk away from coaching for a little bit and just get right. No, like Alex said, like, I don't know, I can't tell you off the top of my head tactically how, I mean, Ty was sound in that regard. Like, he's not like a genius. He's not like, not going to be held in the same regard as like the Carlisles and the Spolstras and even the Popoviches in the NBA. Like, but at the same time, he commanded the respect of LeBron, which not many people got. Like, granted, Spolstra eventually got it, but that took a little bit of reassurance from both Riley and Wade to make that happen. But like, Mike Brown never had it, and David Blatt obviously never had it, and then Luke Walton didn't have it. And like, we'll see how long Frank Vogel lasts with it, but like, you know, the good times are just rolling in LA right now, for, well, at least when they were. So like, no, that's the thing that Ty just kind of has that not many coaches ever will. I mean, that's something in its regard in itself as well. And I'm sure like a lot of players were super upset when he was let go. God, it feels so long ago that the Cavs let him go. It was only last season they did that. Like, obviously he's just a guy who's loved by the veterans, and I'm sure whatever team ends up hiring Ty Lue, if he gets a coaching opportunity this summer, my money's on Philly, because I don't think Brett Brown's long for Philadelphia much longer. He's going to make that team very happy, and he's going to help them unlock the next level of their potential, maybe just like tap into something that maybe a team that's just on the precipice of becoming a truly elite playoff team can actually, you know, maybe he can unlock that. What about you, Chris? Let's hear your thoughts on Ty. You've been awfully quiet.
Best coach in franchise history. I think his ability to navigate the locker room is vastly underrated. I think his ability to call guys out is just going to go down as one of the most important things. I think, you know, does he have like the creativity that like a Carlisle or like a Nick Nurse does? No, I don't think that's as bad, but I think in terms of working with LeBron, organizing a system and knowing how to get the most out of these guys and just being able to trust those guys and that group just being a little more like, despite all the moving parts, like for the Cavs to have so many moving parts and like pieces that are a little weird, and like try to, like, again, like, this is a team that at Christmas had a guy who wasn't on the roster in the playoffs starting at the at the shooting guard position in DeAndre Liggins, and like have all this roster turnover and have limitations, and to have a team that, granted, it's with LeBron, it's with Kyrie, and with Kevin, to just flame through the Eastern Conference the way it did is just really, really impressive. Even Eastern Conference, whatever, they flamed the Eastern Conference this year. Ty is, I think, underrated as a coach. I think he was in the moment. I think the guy was the right guy for the team. And I think 2017 in the 2016-17 season is like the last really good year. And I think when eventually I will talk at some point, depending on how long all of this goes on, we'll probably get around to talking about the next season is sort of like a what if, and I'm like, that season, the 2017-18 season, the last year is just really one of the biggest, like, I think that is one of the most Herculean LeBron things I've ever covered, I've ever seen in my entire lifetime of watching him. And I think 17 was like the, until this year, was probably like the last really good team that he had around him. And I think that, again, I think this team, the coaching job Ty did, everything, the job Griff did, I think really organizing the roster is just going to, it's just one of the overlooked things of the NBA the last 5 years. I really, really, really believe that.
Let me ask you this. And go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, are we not going to give Ty any love for getting to the finals in 2018 with that booty team?
No, him and LeBron, and then like them just dragging what they had out of that team. And just like, I will never forget the Pacers series, Alex, just being there and just like, just knowing LeBron was just like kind of doing what he needed to in certain moments and was just like picking his spots in terms of just destroying the Pacers. And it's just like, it got really tense because it went down to a game seven, but it's just like, LeBron was just doing everything he could to not have to burn all of his energy right away. And that's like the path they sort of chose to do that. And it's just like, that 2017-18 team is like is not good. Not a good basketball team.
And they got worked in game six.
Yeah, like, oh, absolutely worked.
Uh-huh. But my question I was going to ask you was, obviously Steve Kerr has been held in high regard through all of this just because of how many titles the Warriors won. Obviously the Cavs won the one that won matters the most, and maybe people kind of poo-poo Ty a little bit just because of his record overall as a coach in the finals. Do you think, let me ask you this, would you rather have Steve Kerr as a head coach in this time for the Cavs, or would you rather have Ty, you know,
run the show? I'd rather have Ty.
So would I. I don't think basketball socialism would work with LeBron in any sense of the word.
Can I plead the fifth?
You're fine, man. Go. You're a guest. You're not. We won't hold. Everyone else won't hold you accountable. Maybe there'll be a snarky comment in the comments, but you don't.
You
really
can't have me tie stand for 15 minutes and then ask me that question and have me backpedal so hard.
Hey, you know what?
I
got to do what we got to do.
Okay, you can take the bailout approach. I get it.
I'm just gonna say what I'm saying without saying it. That's all.
Yeah,
but. Okay. Yeah. He's a Liverpool fan, so.
Yeah, he sucks.
I'll take Ty.
Yeah. Front runner. Alex, before we get out of here,
can I tell you something really cool about Steve Kerr?
Yes.
Podcast.
He's now in the podcast game.
Right. True.
Just another white guy with a podcast.
Cliche. Yeah,
so, I want to say it was 2018. Yeah, it was 2018. Game three, they were free and easy. You know how this was going. And I got assigned a shoot around that day. And you know how Steve is. I say it like I'm on a first name basis with him. You know how Steve Kerr is with his interviews. He's not, you know, pop, but he's just so insightful, and he'll just talk and be just a human being. He's just a really cool dude. He sat there for, I want to say 20 minutes, like in the same chair, 20 minutes after he wrapped the interview, talking to, I want to say it was like me, David Glazer from the News Herald, and like John Telich, just the three of us just standing there. And he was just telling us old stories about Cleveland. And he was talking about like how they got to tour the arena when it was being built. And he said, I forget what he told us about it. Like, the floor was like originally put down as like a dance floor. That doesn't really mean anything. I'm just trying to put words together about what he said. I don't know. It was just really cool. And he told me stuff about Cleveland that I had never heard before. And that just gave him a lot of cred in my mind.
Ty would have been like, I forgot, and like walked off.
The one thing I didn't like about Ty. It was funny the first couple times.
Yeah, love Ty. Pro Ty. Alex, any final memories you want to share about this 2016-2017 team as we get out of here?
I think we covered, I mean, the one other thing that I really remember from that season, the Christmas Day game was electric. Like you said, I don't think they can honestly tell you that it didn't mean anything to them, because if you watch even the highlights of that game, like it was intense. That was also That was the first Christmas I spent with my wife's family, which was cool. And I remember watching that game, like me and her brother sneaking away from dinner to go watch it. And it was pretty sweet. The other thing I remember from that season is that LeBron, so against the Wizards, I think they had blown a lead, but Kevin Love throws that outlet pass like down to the other free throw line. LeBron catches it, dribbles, and pivot steps just barely behind the three-point line and banks in that three. I don't know that I've seen, like, there's stuff that happens in basketball where you're like, he's a freak athlete, and there's stuff that happens a lot of times, like with LeBron, where you're like, how does a person do that? And then that was just like one of the ultimate team moments for me, because those are two really unique sets of skills, that Love outlet pass and then LeBron's unique skill of being a god. Like, who hits that shot? And the pass had to be perfect, and they ended up winning that game in overtime. That's the other thing I really remember. You know, that's, it goes back to what we were saying about, they just felt otherworldly. And yeah, the Warriors did at that time too, but it felt a little cheap. I don't know, like, when I play 2K, I don't like turn off the trade AI and load my team up. I don't like playing my team and having like all pink diamonds or whatever the hell it is, and just being loaded. Like, they felt authentic and they felt dominant, and it was just an authentically dominant team, and they were dominant enough to beat whatever that Warriors team was. But I liked them. I liked the guys, and you obviously like what was happening on the court.
Fair. Evan, any final thoughts?
I kind of felt, it was kind of cool, I guess, to see three top four picks from the 2011 draft on the same team. That was definitely neat, and I definitely felt validated in the fact that now people can finally put the rest of the notion that the Cavs should have drafted like somebody on the show, Derek Williams over Kyrie. So, maybe they could have gotten Enes Kanter to, you know, complete the set, but could be getting that wrong right now, but you know, you never know what happens. It was a fun time, and I guess maybe it's me being the bummer of the group right now. It's just kind of stinks that this was, you know, the peak after that title. Obviously the team winning the title is the peak, and this was the first step down, and then there was a huge tumble down, because we all know what happens as soon as the season wraps up. It was the beginning of the end for the Cavs and LeBron's second stint in Cleveland. What about you, Chris?
The one thing that we just haven't talked about, you know, the Larry Sanders thing, all that stuff. The Cavs paid $2.4 million to pick Kay Felder before this season.
Hey.
Like, an incredible burning of money.
This summer. They're going to do the same thing this summer with Cassius, whatever his name is.
Cassius Winston from Michigan State, yeah. They literally just burned money for Kay Felder, who's, like, out of the league.
Yeah.
Just an unbelievable like thing for them to being like, okay, do the right thing and try to get like a young, interesting prospect. And I'm not saying like the number 54 pick is like the ideal place to like grab talent or anything like that. Like, I'm not here to tell you that. Like, I'm looking at the thing and it's like, there's not really anyone good taken after him. I'll have to look up some of the undrafted players from 2016. But, like, they burned all this money and they took a really small point guard. And that is just, like, a little bit insane.
It's on brand for
a small point guard
from Michigan.
Small point guard from Michigan. Don't forget. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The list of guys.
If anything I want leading my draft process, it's cognitive bias. That's the number one thing I want in a drafter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And some of the other people that went undrafted in this draft, that they were going to like get someone. Evan and I have actually talked about this a little bit when we did the redraft with Dorian Finney-Smith, Fred VanVleet. Gary Payton Jr. was even a little bit better than him. You know, Ron Baker stuck around in the NBA for a little bit. Yogi Ferrell, if you wanted a point guard type. Wayne Selden. Like, there are guys that did get drafted or didn't went undrafted. Alex Poynters was at least like a wing type. That at one point was like a first round talent evaluated thing. It's just like one of those random things that like ultimately did matter, except for like Dan Gilbert's checkbook. But like they literally like were coming into the season, veteran team trying to win now, and like they were like, okay, we're gonna get some youth in here, but we're gonna burn $2.4 million to take Kay Felder.
Should have drafted Bryn Forbes, dude. He quite literally went to Michigan State.
What are we doing? Come on, at least be on brand if you're going to do something crazy. Yeah, this is just one of those. This is, I think, one of the most memorable Cavs seasons. There's like all these little plot, like the Bogut. We barely touched on like the whole Bogut like thing. That was crazy. The how the Larry Sanders stuff happened, and then he goes away. Like there's just a whole bunch of like craziness, and they're like re-signing Jefferson over the summer and the lead up to it. Like there's just a lot of stuff that happens, and it all obviously falls apart rather quickly. And I think this season, as a result of that and a result of the KD stuff, again, does get lost a little bit to the history. But Alex, thank you so much for coming on. Give everyone a quick plug for everything you have going on right now.
If you're an Indian fan, check us out over at SI, man. We had a good thing going on. We got a good staff of writers. We're led by Matt Lodi, which I can't say enough good about that dude. So if nothing else, help him out. Go over there, check it out. TJ Zuppi's there, who I adore personally and professionally. He's one of the best baseball writers out there, period. So just check us out if you see it coming across your timeline. Sports will be back eventually. And they might be more fun than the Cavs. I don't know.
It's fair. I think that's unfair.
I can't say that with certainty.
Hey, Alex, before we let you go, let me ask you. Clearly, the Browns are the most popular team in Cleveland in terms of fans. Do you Chris disagrees with me on this. Do you think the Indians are the second most popular team in the city?
Yeah. Yeah, because they're like Joe Biden.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
They just carry the senior citizen vote. Like the entire AARP in Cleveland are like diehard Indian fans, and I don't know. I'm skewed because again, sports radio. Those are the guys you get calling in, but yeah, we never got calls on the Cavs, and if we did, it was like asinine.
Okay, that's Alex. That's fair.
Alex, last thing: do you miss baseball, basketball, or our beloved Tottenham Hotspur more? What do you miss the most?
Ask me that last summer, and I think you're getting the last answer, but I need baseball right now. I hope they wipe the entire Premier League season. I don't need any more of that crap. Give me a healthy squad back next year, but no, I need baseball to start.
I don't think you're wrong. I could go for sitting outside talking to my dad in the stands and just like drinking a cold beer right now. That sounds pretty, pretty great. Right. But it sounds
spending $8 on a beer.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's for the memory. It's all you get along the way. Not the draining of your bank account.
I will say this. If we're actually able to go to baseball games in this calendar year, at least you get to go outside, man. I got to go to that shoe factory down here in Tampa if I want to go see a baseball game.
That's true. That means you should just move back to the Superior City. That's all I'm saying.
Tom Brady's in his backyard now.
So Tampa Bay. It's true. Tampa Bay now. Okay.
Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
We'll see what's going on here. Yeah, Alex, you're in a great place where WWE is an essential business. Really, really.
I was supposed to go to WrestleMania. WrestleMania.
Oh, that is true. You are a wrestling guy. I always forget you're a wrestling guy.
What a weird time.
What a weird world we live in. There's literally, as we're recording this, there's a organized by the White House. Evan says, I went off this ride to a quote tweet. That's Adam Silver, Rob Manfred, Roger Goodell, Gary Bettman, Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones, Dana White, and Vince McMahon are part of a large group that will help advise on how to restart the economy. And
we need our sports back.
We need our sports back. What a world we live in.
Yikes.
All right. On that note, this has been our look back at
that. I like it.
Yeah, that's fair. This has been our look back at the 2016-17 Cavs for myself, for Evan. This has been Locked On Cavs. And thanks again to Alex for coming on. Follow everything he's doing over there, writing about the Indians, and we'll surely have him back on soon because it's been too long bringing him back this time. But thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon with another look back at an old Cavs season with Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report joining us for that one. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.